Welcome to Rodney Veal's Inspired By, a production of Public Media Connect, the regional partnership of CET in Cincinnati and Think TV in Dayton. Rodney Veal, our host for this podcast, is an independent choreographer, interdisciplinary artist, and all-around fan of all things arts and creativity. And he's excited to share another great conversation with you. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to our next podcast episode. And I'm super excited to talk to Michael Lynn Michalik, who is an awesome artist, lady about town, is doing such important work and just some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful artwork. And I'm fanboying out. So that's just kind of the nature of the beast of me doing this podcast. And she is going to talk about all things art and art making and motherhood and taking a break from art and then coming back to it and so many special, hopefully amazing things because she is that person. So welcome, Michael Lynn, to the podcast.
Thank you, Rodney. And thank you for such a beautiful introduction.
And full caveat to the folks out there that we had to retape the podcast. So it is true what I'm saying about Michael Lynn. So this is really great.
If you and say it twice, then you really mean it.
Is that true? And you know, of course, this is Valentine's Day's week. It's Valentine's week as opposed to day that we're recording. So yeah, it's a little candy heart.
Thank you.
And I was thinking about the first time we met because we met in 2015 and right. You were exhibiting work in my neighborhood, which is right Dunbar. For those who live in Dayton, it's a historic district. Not that I live fancy or anything, but I just live in Dayton. But she was exhibiting her work in a storefront. And back in 2015, we were like, who is this woman who's showing her artwork in a storefront? So I want you to tell us, How did you do that?
Yeah, so I have a friend that worked at the National Aviation Heritage Area. And well, I should back up that like I decided after, I don't know, if it had been like 12, 13 plus years since I'd actually made any work. And my kids were getting older and I felt like I always told myself like when they got in school, I was going to get back to my studio practice. Anyway, I started making work and a friend of mine's like, what's your plan? I was like, I have been out of the loop. I had moved to Dayton in 2008. So it wasn't like I was cued into the art scene there or if I knew any other artists. And so my friend was like, I think you could have a show in my neighborhood. And so she took me to a woman that like manages a few properties there. And I said, look, I'm an artist and I'd love to like show my work in one of these abandoned buildings that you have. And she was like, so you want to like rent it for the month? And I was like, sure. But I was like, I basically can give you like $100 like to cover the utilities. And because she wanted to actually rent it to me. And I was like, I don't think you understand. And the caveat was if someone came along and signed the lease and wanted to move in right then I would either move to a different storefront or whatever. Anyway, I just wanted to like put my work out there and have it seen, which is, I think, what most artists want. And I wasn't sure how to do that in Dayton. So I just got an abandoned store and did that. So yeah, I think it was like such a fun way to meet everybody in the community because people were like, who's this like crazy lady that rents a storefront and makes her own show, you know, anyway. So yeah, I met a lot of people in the Dayton arts community because I think it like kind of drew some attention because it wasn't something that like everyone was doing and it wasn't at Front Street or one of the typical like artists.
Right.
And so, yeah, to me, it was really a great introduction to a different community of people in Dayton. So like I could find the other artists and yeah, I mean,
it was a great experience.
That's how we met.
I mean, it served its purpose. And what I loved about it, because it's really funny to me because we all like, no one else was doing that, which you kind of like, you know, it was like, wow, you could do this yourself. I mean, you really were kind of setting the tone for the next, in essence, almost a decade in Dayton. You stop and really think about that. I'm like, whoa, right. Of like, you know, you kind of upended the apple cart, which is a really cool thing. So, I mean, the work was strong. I mean, it was like, who is this woman doing these big, bold paintings, these expensive paintings? Because they were bold and colorful and exciting. I mean, I was like, I walked in, I was like a kid in the candy store. I'm like, who is she? Oh, my God. I'm like, oh, I was just in complete awe. And so you talked about it. And it's like, let's talk about this fact that you had like stopped painting and being an artist for like 12, 13 years. I mean, I'm going to attribute that to motherhood, but you tell me how do you attribute
some of it? A lot of it is motherhood. I mean, and also I think like at the time, you see more of it now. Like there's a lot more push for women that have children that are artists, and there's whole communities around it. Maybe within the last, I don't know, 4 years, I've seen a bigger, even bigger push. And a lot more groups that are trying to, you know, be supportive for women that have children or, you know, families. And at the time, I think because when I came out of school and I made certain choices to get married and have a family, and then I just felt like I didn't really have a community. The internet, it was a different game back then.
Yeah, it was.
So, and I just didn't know how to be an artist with these other things. I felt like really kind of drained in my role and the things that I was doing. I didn't feel like I had time. I mean, there were like a number of factors, but also I think a really big one is just not knowing like how to find a community and get and feel supported to make work. So it just took me some time to come back around to it, but it was always something that really bothered me. I felt like that I had let that part of myself go because I run into people sometimes and they feel guilty because they haven't made work in like 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And I was like, try 13 years.
Try 13 like, years, exactly.
You can always go back to it. So yeah, I think it took me a long time to come around and feel confident enough to make stuff and find a community and all those things that I think go into, I don't know, feeling comfortable and supported in your practice.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm kind of curious is like, you know, with this, that gap in time, I mean, the prior to the 13 years, and I love a dog entering into the story, so it's all good. It's super cool. Wait, your family life. I'm expecting a cat to show up on my shoulder like a parrot in a second.
Oh,
the cat's coming. I have a cat. It's coming.
Yeah.
And so it's like, was your work like because of the break? Did the work evolve, change, different prior to the break? I mean, what were you kind of focused on before this break?
My work, I don't think is similar at all, except maybe in some techniques that I use to like draw work and sort of process through it. But to me, like my work became about domestic life because I felt like it was the thing that like prevented me in a way from being an artist. So for me, it started first off with like a lot of furniture, which is the painting that you saw.
Right.
Like, yeah. Yes. But then it became sort of like I was taking photos all the time with my phone of my family. And it became sort of about this, you know, distraction and what we commit ourselves to. So it was a lot of images of like somebody looking at their phone, somebody else doing something else, sort of like being in the same space with a group of people, but you're all, it's like when we logged on, I was like so close yet so far away, right? Crazy. You can be in a house and with a bunch of people and you know, you can be physically close, but, you know, have all this other distance. So the work was a lot of, you know, taking these images, and then I would just make piles and piles of drawings, and then sort of evolved into almost a documentation of, you know, my life at that time, and sort of those domestic things that were going on.
You seemed ahead of the curve in the sense of this kind of documentation of the domestic life, the internal life of an artist. You were kind of doing something that now everybody seems to have jumped on your bandwagon to do, and you've evolved it. I think it's because it's been in the sin of omission that we've always had the male gaze about life and domestic life, and is always looking at the partner and never looks at the family unit or the relationships that are more intimate. It always seems surface. Sometimes it feels distant. And I love your work doesn't feel distant. It just feels like all in. It just makes you, and it feels connective. Like you feel connected to, you see an instant, you go, I can connect to this.
How I do feel like it was sort of a pent up, there was pent up energy. Like I was making, it's not like it was all masterworks, but I had a lot of creative energy. Like, and so I made a lot of work in the last, I made up for the time that I wasn't making work by making just a ton of work. I feel like I had to get that sort of out of me. But I mean, there is a tradition of women making work about domestic life, but I also think that a lot of that has been labeled sentimental and, you know, for certain reasons, and which is something, I mean, that's a term that's always attached to women's work when women are making stuff about family life or domestic life. There's always sentimentality is a term that's always attached to women's work. If a man makes a work about family life, like no one felt that way about Fairfield Porter. No one said, oh, he's sentimental because he's painting his family or whatever. So that was one thing that I felt really strongly about presenting, like the work, even though that it's always been termed sort of sentimental, but presenting it sort of in the way that, you know, with me in it and sort of these messy sort of moments that aren't scripted and perfect, kind of subvert that idea a little bit. But also I just love playing into the sentimental idea. I was like, you call this sentimental? I'll show you sentimental. So yes. There's something I really love about sort of, you know, because I know I have a bit of a chip on my shoulder about being a woman that has a family and children and also making art about that sort of thing. But I mean, that's, I feel like some of my motivation for playing that up so hard, because I, you know, those ideas about, you know, I mean, this is usually the sort of work that doesn't lend itself to a lot of, you know, critical thinking sometimes, because they say like, well, this is just a sentimental subject. And that's kind of how the work also, I feel like I transitioned from painting into textile, because I was like, well, you know, you're going to call it domestic, you're going to call it sentimental. How can I make it even more so in both technique and material? And that's why I turned to craft and textile making, because I was like, let's just push this whole idea even more. Let's make rugs, but make them about, you know, the same subject matter.
Is that a recent kind of transition?
I've been making textiles, I want to say like 3 or 4 years now. It's been at least when I started doing it, I felt like I just really had to throw myself completely into it in order to, because I just didn't have any experience. Well, I mean, I don't know who has a lot of experience with a commercial rug tufting gun. But at the time, like there was like one YouTube video that I saw. I contacted a lot of artists that were using the same tools to ask questions. It got really popular over the pandemic. rug making.
And all
these places sprung up, and YouTube videos and TikTok videos on how to use the equipment. Yeah, it got super crazy. Or maybe it's just my algorithm. Sometimes it's hard for me to tell. It's like, is this the most popular thing in the world now, or is it just like the algorithm?
It's not the algorithm, because I've seen so many artists, particularly coming out of England, who really got into this sort of rug textile quilting sort of process. And I attribute it to like, well, you're in lockdown because of COVID.
Right.
What else are you going to do? You know, it's like, well, let's just go in for a new technique or a new genre. But it's like, but I love the fact that you said, well, I'm all in on the subversion. That's what I'm talking about. You've kept that from 2015 to like the that rebellious sort of like, well, I'm going to do this. I'm like, I'm going to keep going. And that's, and that fearlessness. And so I'm kind of curious, because I'm a big fan of Bisa Butler, who's a quilt maker who's just absolutely extraordinary. I ask that question because a lot of times when we're making art, we don't realize we're in that moment if everyone else is doing a very similar thing. I see you at gallery shows and seeing other work. What is it about that part of the process of exploring other artists and exploring new techniques that fascinates you and should fascinate those who are making art?
Textile artists are having a moment. I think craft figuration is having a moment, doing figurative work, using traditional craft techniques. Interested in all of it, because obviously it's something that I'm exploring in my own work. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of really interesting textile artists. Erin Riley, do you know her work?
No.
Gigantic woven tapestries that are also autobiographical, just super amazing. They're so huge and just really, really intimate content. And yeah, they're just really amazing. And they're very, I mean, she's very open about her life in them. And so I also think that's so interesting, like what she's sharing about her life.
Well, who are your personal favorites? I mean, because, you know, I could tell that she really is speaking to you. So who else is kind of speaking to you in that regard? In that kind of cool way.
I also love, well, Trish Anderson. She does rug making, but it's all abstract, very textural, has done these huge installations. She's really an amazing textile artist, but, you know, not from just from, you know, actual, you know, material wise, we don't have subject matter in common. I don't know. There's just like too many to mention almost right now. Oh, Suchitra Mathai. She makes these beautiful weavings out of old saris and sort of like these domestic objects. They're really amazing. And she's been doing some installation work as well. I love her work as well. I don't know. I feel like I could prattle on like probably all day.
But that's how I found out about artists, is when other artists talk about other artists who they get excited about. Like I love Bisa Butler. And I did something about one of my day jobs at Sinclair, and a student asked me what artist is speaking to you right now. And it was a career day thing. And I said, Kara Walker, she's really speaking to me. And they were like, who is that? I said, you need to look her up. She's the real deal. You know,
Who's that?
They're like, who's that? I said, just be forewarned, it's going to be very in your face, very disturbing imagery. And but I'm fascinated in that fearlessness. So that's what I love about like talking to artists. That's why we're like, you're sharing what you like is going to go out to the world. So hopefully they'll find them and find you as well. And it was really funny because I was reading, because I did that deep dive. I'm holding this up to the screen. John Berger.
Yeah.
Someone recommended this to me and I just got it. So I haven't even started reading it yet. And it was a quote that you said, "We never look at just one thing. We're always looking at the relationship between things and ourselves."
Right.
You are quoted for saying that. And I was like, oh, this must be the book I need to read. I'm trying to remember who recommended this to me.
Maybe it was me. No,
it might have been. I mean,
it's kind of essential. Well, and then just, you know, I don't know. There's a lot about the male gaze in there. So, which, you know, in a lot of the work that I was doing about my family, I was, you know, lurking or larger than life, because I would be, it'd be like a selfie and I'd be shooting somebody over and just staring dead on. I think about, you know, things that he says about the gaze in there, the male gaze. And so I mean, there's a whole section too on the difference between naked and nude.
Okay, so folks, this book is called The Way of Seeing by John Berger. It is essential reading. I just got the book and it's worth it. So we're going to take a little short break in the conversation for a station break. But when we come back, we're going to talk some more about all things art.
I'm Anne Rodolanti, a member of the Inspired By team and the series producer of The Art Show. If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd love to tell you about The Art Show, also hosted by Rodney Beal. Each week, Rodney profiles the worlds of art, music, dance, and theater in and around Southwest Ohio, along with cultural highlights from across the nation. Stream it now on the official Art Show YouTube channel or on the PBS app. Thanks, and now back to the show.
Michael Lynn, motivation. I'm kind of curious, because I'm very curious about your motivation after this break, because I think a lot of people, I think you talked about it briefly in the beginning, like when people say, I've been away from my art for 3 months or 6 months, or they're away from that thing that's really driving them. You're saying, try 13 years. It's like, so let's talk about motivation, because do you still feel motivated like you did after that burst in 2015 now the same way?
I feel like every little thing that happens when you get that show or that residency or you sell a piece to a big collector, I feel like that's like, wow, you know, I get so motivated. And not that that's the only reason to keep going, but it does help validate it in some ways. You know, you feel like, oh yeah, they get it. They get the work, or like you feel like you're, you know, reaching someone or inspiring someone. And so, yeah, I feel like that's motivation in itself. It's not the, you know, it's not the same as it was in the beginning, but I just, yeah, it's just as good.
When I was looking at like just making up for lost time, you jumped into a whole bunch of artist residencies. I was like, oh my God. I was like digging into your background. I felt like I was being an investigative reporter, but I was like, she's done a lot of like in residencies and continue.
Yeah.
Let's for people who may not know, artist residencies are really important. Mm-hmm. I think an artist development. I've had two, and I think that they were instrumental in the kind of work that I make. So talk about how important these things are. Stress it to people.
Right. Well, I mean, it's very important to me. Like, I was looking at ways of reconnecting back into the community. And I do feel like a lot of success in the arts comes from connecting with other artists, because you can share opportunities, you can share each other's work. So residencies for me, like, I always felt like, most importantly, the experience of meeting other artists and sort of that extremely focused time that you can have, like, away from your everyday life. For me, the residencies I did at the beginning were really great, because I had never had that long of a stretch of period of time where I could just be only in the studio because of that, you know, my children were in school. And basically, when I first started making work, I was making it between the hours of 9 to 3. So that's not a whole lot of time. And then squeezing in little bits here and there in the evenings and on weekends and stuff. So that first residency was really great because I could just spend 10, 11 hours, you know, thinking about work. And also, I think the other great thing for me was just meeting and making a lot of connections, because that's helped with sort of showing work and, I don't know, having conversations about technique and things going on, you know, issues that as artists we're trying to address with our work or any sort of thing like that. So I've found that really helpful, like having a community, like both locally, but kind of, you know, because of these residencies and like maintaining relationships with people through the internet and Instagram and those sorts of things as well. But yeah, I really think, and the thing is, it's really a privilege to be able to go to a residency, because there's so many. If, you know, I was just talking to a friend the other day and I thought, oh, well, it's got to be great to go on a residency because you're single and you don't have to like worry about someone taking care of your kids and all that stuff. But she's single. So she also has to pay, you know, even if she's going on this residency for a month, she has to have somebody, like she has to pay her bills and her this and their that, you know. So if she's taking a leave from her other job to attend this residency. So they're really great, but I recognize that there is a lot of privilege in being able to do that, both like with what kind of support that you have in your life and even like monetary support. I was lucky because at the time, you know, I was married then and my ex-husband was able to step up and take care of the kids and the house and those sorts of things. And because we had a combined living situation, you know, he was able to like handle those sorts of things. So yeah, I wish there were more opportunities for more artists of all means to sort of attend these things, because I do think they're really important to have that focus time and to be able to meet other people.
Oh no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's like I talked, said earlier, I feel like that was really pivotal. And that shift to for me to do this multidisciplinary work, I needed that time to figure out how the parts came together versus the struggle of like, I have a thesis to write. I need to pay my bills. I'm like, keep a relationship, keep the family happy in the whole nine yards. And so you're absolutely right. You're absolutely 100% right. That it is a privilege to do it. And so any way that you can convene as artists, I feel, even beyond our residency, are important. You talked about the internet, and the internet was different back in the day. I just feel like we're saying back in the day.
Like, I'm not that old. We're not that old. I feel like we're talking like old people.
It's like, come on, it's okay. This is the safe space for that. So, but there is a difference. Do you think that the internet has, and especially since in the light of COVID, I mean, we all had the impact of COVID in our lives. Do you think that the internet really helped artists maintain community? Because I felt like I found more artists, new artists that way.
Yeah, I feel like that. And also the internet really has helped me become more successful, because I think back in the day, you really had to be part of one of those major hubs if you really wanted to be considered successful on certain levels or to do certain things. There's many ways to be an artist, and not everyone wants to have a show at the Whitney. But like, if that is indeed your goal, like you're never were going to be able to do it by living in Dayton, Ohio, like pre-internet. So I do think like the internet has helped us be able to share work and to make connections and to reach places and galleries that I would have had no access to unless I physically lived in that location. And to me, like, I feel like I'm really grateful that I can live in a place like Dayton that's like affordable and so easy to live in, but then be able to show my work like in Denver or New York or any of those places. So I do think even during COVID, like it was a way to keep in touch with other artists to see what they were doing. A lot of shows switched to online, but I still contend that online shows are basically just Instagram. Like I'm looking at an online show every day when I open Instagram because I have nothing but artists in my feed.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like artists and dancers. And so, yeah, I mean, because that's why I feel like I discovered other podcasts. I discovered a podcast about art and art making and art, the business of art. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, in many ways, it's just kind of like, just strengthened, like, oh, we don't. In many ways, you kind of started that like in an analog way. I'm going to go in a storefront in 2015. I mean, you really, let's step back and analyze it for a second. You did it in a storefront. You don't need the mechanisms that we think we need to be successful, whatever we deem success to be as an art maker. You now can do it on your terms. And so that's where we're at now. So it's kind of like, it's kind of cool. And it's kind of like the wild, wild west. It's like, woo, we could do anything. So it's just really cool. So I have a question. You're doing all this and then I know you, because you're really involved in the arts community here in Dayton and elsewhere, being involved in like jury open calls, like being on juries for art and art making, that's important. I mean, so talk about why that's important to do as an art maker.
I don't know. I always feel like there have been people in my life that they're artists, I mean, that have been super generous with their time and their advice or are helping me out in one way or another. And I feel like, you know, you need to pay it forward in a way. So right now I have two assistants in my studio, like helping me make work. And I'm like, every day I'm like, you know, what are your goals? Like, how can I help them out? I had a studio visit from a museum curator and I was like, I'm having this visit. Would you like to be in the studio when this happens? Because I feel like I didn't really have anybody. I had to figure a lot of things out, especially after that big break and trying to figure out what my community was. And so the few people that have stepped up, I'm really grateful for that advice. Or like, there's been some people that have like passed my work to certain galleries and I've been able to work with them because of that, because a lot of times that's how gallerists get names of people that they work with is just from other artists. So yeah, I feel like being on a jury or, you know, giving a presentation about grant making or talking to college students. I mean, these are all like things that I feel like important to just, you know, share my experience. And I'm not saying like I'm got the best advice in the world, but I can share my experience and what I've done and what has been successful for me, because I do think there is a bit of, I don't know, sometimes there's too much competition, I think, in what we do. And there's also a bit of mystery about it. And so to me, like, I've never been great with secrets, and I just am willing to kind of share like what has worked for me and, you know, my advice and how I've, you know, done the things that I've done. Like, there's no mystery here.
There's no mystery. but that's, I love you said there's no mystery here, because I think that's been a common through line, because I've talked to, I think this is, I want to say this is my 7th interview for the podcast. So that's how new this is. Talking about stepping into new territory and doing, and there's no mystery to this. You build the plane as you go. There's a through line. Everybody has said in different walks of life, I've talked to Ron Rollins. I've talked to Amy Deal, Countess Winfrey, who's a choreographer at DCDC, and Joey Munda, who's a Broadway producer. All of them have said the same thing about, well, there's no mystery to this. Share what you know. Help others out. It just seems to be a thing. Do you think it's more... The common thread has been that everyone's from the Midwest. Do you think it's because of our environment that just kind of lends itself, or is it just naturally a thing that we're inclined to do anyway?
I do think Midwesterners are a lot more practical and not, excuse me, and not, you know, that mysterious. I don't know. I feel like.
I think you're right.
Right. There's not like this air about them where they're too cool for school or anything like that. They're like, we're all in Ohio. We know. We've accepted that.
We've accepted
our lives.
Exactly. That the weather's going to change. You're going to have four seasons in less than 48 hours.
Right.
Case in point, right. That is winter again. So yeah, it's a very common through line. And we know that we were going to try to, just to let you know, we wanted to people who have a connection to the Midwest and to the Miami Valley. So we're reaching all these different ways, and it's kind of fun. I mean, so that's why I love the fact that it's like, that's the universal. So because you talked about giving advice. Right. So now you have this platform. You get to give big career advice. Give one piece of advice that you wish you had known. You know, you know that you learn something, and it's not necessarily because it's a failure or,
right.
or but there's that thing where you go, had I known, things would have been different. What would it be? Your advice to someone in that way?
Well, I think for me, like, I don't know what the advice would be. I feel like I've thrown so much at the wall and I've done a bit of everything. So I think recently I learned that, like, you really do need to have, like, a really, really strong body of work before you approach a gallery. And you need to have, like, 30 really good pieces. Because, yeah, going to them with, like, 5 or 10 is not... And I think I probably did approach a bunch of places before I was kind of ready to, but... I don't know. Who's to say when you're ready and when you're not ready? I don't know. And who's to say, like, if you only have 10 pieces that the gallery won't take you? I don't know. I don't know. Try everything. And I feel like I said yes to everything when I first started. Everything. You know, like, do you want to hang your work in my restaurant? Yes. Do you want to, like, have a painting at, I don't know, in the background of my TV show.
Yes.
And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that works. So at the beginning, I said yes to everything, right? And now I'm getting better at saying no to a lot of things. I'm like, no, I'm not. When I first started, I think it was applying to about 50 to 60 things every year. So okay. Which it gets expensive. But
it's time consuming too.
Time consuming. But it was everything from shows to residencies to grants and stuff. And now I'm at a point where I'm a lot more selective about what I do apply to and not. But at the beginning, it was great because people would be like, oh, you've gotten all these things. And I was like, I'd get 2 things, but I had applied to 50 things. So people are like, wow, you're really doing it. Yeah. You don't know the statistics on this, do you? But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to give advice because everybody has a different goal about what their dream about how they're going to be an artist looks like. You know, again, like there are people that just, you know, are happy to make their paintings every Sunday and, you know, maybe sell them once a month at a little open studio thing. And there are people that want to, like, show internationally at the world's best museums. And so there's just different ways to approach that. And I say, try everything and evaluate what works for your goals and what you want to do ultimately in the end, because really that's all that matters. And then once you say yes to everything and you know what you like, then it's okay to start saying no a lot.
I love it. Well, I'm grateful that you didn't say no to us. So I'm very, very appreciative of that. So, I mean, it's just such a joy. It's like you're full of life and energy and spirit about art making and the life, being in the life of an art maker. So thank you for sharing.
Rodney Veal's Inspired By is a production of Public Media Connect, the regional partnership of CET in Cincinnati and Think TV in Dayton. There's a lot of great art happening around Southwest Ohio, and we're excited to be part of it. If you liked this episode, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can learn more and find the show notes at thinktv.org/inspiredby or cetconnect.org/inspiredby. Thank you.